Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. With a post-pandemic world finally on the horizon, arts and tourism leaders are looking to restore activity in central and northern Wisconsin, and with it, the lifeblood to help fuel an economic recovery. There are hints that a rebound is around the corner, and for a region that relies heavily on the arts, creative communities, and tourism, that's good news. But navigating that path will most certainly have challenges after a year in which the arts community itself largely stayed home, and concerts and festivals were canceled throughout the region. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Along with the tourism industry, the cultural and creative sectors have been hit hard by the economic downturn of the past year. Today, we welcome representatives from three organizations in the region who are finding innovative ways to harness creativity and promote collaboration, creating a positive impact on the local economy moving forward. Joining us for the first segment of today's program is Lillian Bittman. She is Communications Chair of the Waupaca Community Arts Board. She'll be discussing bringing art and music back to the region. Lillian, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Later in the program, we'll hear from Create Portage County founder Bill Sherrill and Executive Director Greg Wright, who will share their vision for building vibrant, welcoming communities through creativity and collaboration, and what that could mean for neighboring communities. We'll also speak with Ashley McLaughlin and Tracy Steinbrink from Art Start Rhinelander about their efforts in the North Woods. Listeners can join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742 or by emailing us at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. So, Lillian, tell us about the Waupaca Community Arts Board. What is your organization all about?
Our organization is all about the fact that everyone can enjoy the arts. You don't have to be a professional artist. So we are a true community-based arts group. We're all volunteer-driven. So in your lead-up to this, you mentioned that everything had stopped. In Waupaca, it didn't stop because we wouldn't let it stop. So yes, we didn't have live events, but we made a huge pivot to make sure that our community could use the arts in as many creative ways as we could come up with to make quarantine more palatable. And I think we were extremely successful at that, specifically because of the feedback we got and the way that people just came to everything that we put out. We, for instance, started a craft cafe in the summer, last summer, that you could come and pick up pre-made art projects from our library. We worked in great collaboration with the library, and take them home and have something to do with your family of all ages. And those, they were free, but they sold out. So they were two-week projects that frequently were gone in the first week. So we feel, and that's just one of many things. Our community art project went ahead and continued, and actually it was drawn together by kindness. So it wound up being absolutely amazing that we had planned this project in the fall and had actually started getting the community involved in creating the pieces that were eventually going to become the art installation. And we were going into churches and into businesses and community groups and schools and any activity that happened in Waupaca. We were there with our art supplies for people to participate, and that all stopped. So we weren't sure what was going to happen with that. But by August, when planned installation was originally planned, we wound up being able to do that. And we had some additional stuff we did to make it more colorful. And the community, it was like a breath of fresh air. Our downtown was alive with color with this community art project and some banners that we had different families create about interconnectedness. So I just don't feel like we stopped. We just kept on going. And we had to cancel. We worked very, very closely with our Arts and Culture Network, of which we are a part. It's our community-wide organization for making sure that all the aspects of our community are together to bring arts into the community and culture. At the beginning of the pandemic, we worked very closely with all those different organizations because, as you probably remember, nobody knew what was next. And, we were all personally afraid to some degree, but we didn't know what to expect. We were deep into planning our summer nights concerts into our week-long summer festival, Arts on the Square and Arts Bishopwick Week. And we didn't know, should we cancel? So that group through March, finally, everyone decided from the city through the different arts organizations that yes, it didn't make sense to have summer events. So we canceled, and that was April. And at that point, our group said, no, we can't not have things. And so we started having Zoom meetings, which none of us knew what those were in the beginning. And, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to our president. She's just a power horse, and she figured it all out and she pulled us all in. And to be honest, when she first called them, I was relatively new to the group. When she first called the first Zoom meeting, I thought, this is insane. What are we doing? You know, right. But she really got us involved. And so we spent a lot of time pivoting. What can we do? And the Craft Cafe was part of it. And, you know, the decision on Drawn Together by Kindness. And ironically, I had started to create a new website, which was supposed to launch in April. And then, of course, it all stopped. And we made the decision that that really had to launch because we pulled everything online. So that launched May 1st. And that interacted very closely with our social media, of course. And that, I think, was one of those things that had been planned, but we didn't understand what the impact would be in a quarantined world. And that was just one of those things that, you know, the kismet, right? It came at the right time. So then we had grants for that Arts on the Square Festival, and the two grantors came to us, the city with their tax money and the CFCU, and said, can you use this money for something else for Waupaca, for the arts? And we said, yeah, we've been wanting to do a big mural. So we did a mural contest, and we wound up with a 100-foot mural by Leif Larson out of Oshkosh in our downtown area. So we just feel like we kept on going. And so now we have all these other things. You know, we did poetry classes online. We did a chick night online, which is a big celebration of women and arts, and that just happened. We just kept going. Our newsletter kept getting hits as far as new subscribers. And so now we're in the process of a massive renovation downtown. And so we had wanted to be a part of that as well. So we have two projects that are part of that right now that's ongoing. One was Sidewalk Poetry, which mm-hmm. that contest just ended. And those 16 poems will be laid into our new sidewalks this summer. And we're concluding a 3D Art Alley project, which is another contest. And right now we have about 85 pieces of art that have been submitted for 26 locations downtown. And the reason for that is you can't use our front doors and for our downtown sure. businesses right now. Yeah. Sure. So I don't feel like we stopped. We just like,
no, it sounds like you never stood still.
No,
I'm curious about the things that you talked about pivoting with. And do yes. you see some of those changes that your organization made, like more virtual offerings and events, becoming permanent, becoming a part of your future strategy, maybe a hybrid approach? What do you mm-hmm. think is going to happen?
I definitely think the online classes will continue to be a thing. You know, that's an accessibility issue for a lot of people, specifically parents. We had a lot of parents that joined some of those poetry classes with young kids at home. And we all know how hard it is to get out of the house when you have young kids. But so I think that'll continue to be something we do. The Craft Cafe was not virtual, but of course we promoted it as such. It was a pickup thing at the library. It was a big collaboration with our library. My personal thing is, let's continue some of this Zoom meeting and not always have to drive into town. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been one for, we don't need a meeting when we can have an email. So I think that'll be something also we continue, because we're a little spread out. There's only 12 of us, and, you know, we live in the Waupaca area. So
I see you have a Facebook Live music event coming up.
Yes.
Do you see live music, actual live music, not virtual,
yeah,
coming back in the near future for yes. Waupaca?
Yes, we're in the process now of planning this summer's event. So Waupaca as a whole is opening up this summer with cautions, with masking, whatever the CDC recommends. Our group feels extremely strongly that we follow the CDC guidelines. So our August event is coming with live music. It's a week-long event with a big Saturday event. And so all of that is happening at this point, unless the CD, you know, unless something happens. So we're definitely going back to that.
And you have a juried art show coming up?
Yes, that's part of our festival. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And our WAPACA online, which is what you referenced earlier, that's through our radio station. That all went online through FaceTime. And now that this time we'll be in the studio, but no audience. We used to have an audience in the studio. So we're slowly moving back to that. You know, the more things are right now, we're still figuring that out.
Does the Jury Dart Show bring people from out of the area?
Yes.
Or it does?
Okay. Yes. So WAPACA is kind of unusual in that we are about a community of 6,500 people. But in the summer, we swell to 45,000. And the reason for that are all the homes around the chain of lakes. So there are many people that have two homes and they come here and they live here all summer. So we have, and they come from all over. Myself, we would come from Connecticut. So, you know, we've had people coming from all over the country and living here in the summer. As a result, our art show in particular draws from all over the region. And these contests have also come from all over the region. So, you know, people have submitted for it. So we are kind of seen, I think, as a hub in the area.
So aside from the Jury Dart Show, which you said brings people from out of the area,
sure.
Do you see that there's a solid connection between the arts and tourism in your area?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, some of our funding happens because of that. Room nights and that sort of thing. That's where we get the tax. So absolutely, the arts, that's one reason we have the Arts and Culture Network, is the concept that you cannot have a thriving community without the arts and without culture. And that's for one, bringing tourism in, but also building up your community as a whole. So this during the pandemic, we were very focused on the community, and now we'll be opening it back up to where we are very focused on visitors as well, because everyone wins that way.
I have to ask, when the pandemic is finally in our rearview mirror,
yeah,
what does the future look like for the WAPACA Community Arts Board and its initiatives? Do you see future growth, future partnerships down the line?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a big Bach Festival coming up this September, and we are constantly doing new collaborations with our community. Our art board itself is growing. We're having more people come on board as volunteers. So, we have big plans. We have very big plans. We often have more plans than we can execute with 12 people.
and will those collaborations that you mentioned earlier, will those collaborations continue to play a role in the
Absolutely.
Growth of your organization? How
Absolutely.
Important
They're
is that?
They're imperative. We wouldn't be able to grow without them. We wouldn't have been able to do half the things this summer without the collaborations we had in the community, the existing ones. And they just grew even stronger. Historical Society, Library, the Chamber of Commerce. The city itself, the working relationship between all of us is so strong now. And that is after years of work, and the pandemic really solidified it because we were all in this together. So.
You're listening to Lillian Bittman from the WAPACA County Arts Board, our first guest today on Route 51, as we discuss how creativity is sparking a comeback for communities in our region. Lillian, I want to thank you for being here today, and best of luck with your efforts in the future.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
When we return, Bill Sherrill and Greg Wright will join us from Create Portage County to discuss their unique approach to empowering the creative community in their area and ways those efforts are being replicated throughout the region. Your questions and comments are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Today we're discussing how creative communities and arts organizations are working to jumpstart the economy while promoting tourism in the area. Speaking with representatives from three separate groups in the region. Later in the program, we'll hear about ArtStart in Rhinelander and their efforts. But now we welcome two guests to the program. Create Portage County President and Founder Bill Sherrill joins us. Bill, thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here, Shereen.
Also from Create is Executive Director Greg Wright. Greg, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. We'd like to hear your questions too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. I'd like to start with some background for people who are not in Portage County and are not familiar. CREATE might be new to them. So Bill, you're the founder. How did this get started, and what's the mission of the organization?
It really got started about 18 years ago as an arts organization. Very typical of the community, looking for an umbrella arts organization that did not exist at that time. We gathered people together, formulated the organization that had just received a grant from the state to kind of formulate and do some research at that point. And at that point, we just started, you know, communicating and really promoting what was already in existence in the community with always the focus on economic impact. Back at that time, and even today, we talk about how are the arts impacting economically to the community, and that was always an underpinning that we wanted to do. And as overall, we wanted to create vitality in the community so that Stevens Point in the Portage County area was an attractive place to live and to be proud of and to move there. And even back then, we weren't talking about the competition of talent, but it was always that underpinning. And then about 5 years ago, now it's, I forget, it's been so long, Greg is part of the woodwork at this point, that we had hired Greg as, I think it was our third or fourth executive director at that point. And he brought such amazing talents and really came up with, as we evolved and the community evolved and things happened in the arts world, really developed the CREATE Portage County brand. And I think he is the kingpin to be able to talk about like what that really meant as his tenure with the organization, how we transferred.
Okay. Well, I was looking at your website, and I thought it was interesting that you identify some pretty clear strategies, and I'd like to talk about those. The first is about creativity and elevating the creative identity of the community. Craig, it sounds like a fantastic idea. How do you accomplish it? How do you evaluate the community for its creative identity? That sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, well, as Bill was talking about, a lot of our work was really motivated by workforce attraction and retention. And what we saw is that strong creative communities were attracting people. It was less about the size. People talked about people moving to big cities, but we found that they were actually just moving to really creative places. And you could find small creative places that were attracting people in big cities that didn't have a creative identity, and they weren't as much. And so we really looked at what people were doing in those communities that had strong creative identities, and we found they were doing public art. They were doing mural installations. They were really rethinking how their community felt in that way. We found their narratives were also often about local creatives. So they were really proud of local businesses. They were really proud of local products that were made there. And so they were talking less about attracting outside business in big boxes and franchises to their community and talking more about their own restaurants, shops, products that they were making. And so we tried to do as much of that as we could, really tell the story of the people in Portage County who are doing creative things as a way to attract more people here to do the same thing.
And I think, and with that, also identifying what was a creative economy. That was kind of a new thing. And to have local businesses even understand that they may not think of themselves as creative, but they were. And that they were bringing, and their people and their employees were bringing that to the table and to the community on a daily basis.
So you're really raising awareness about what that means as well. I saw that another strategy for CREATE Portage County is one that I would imagine was difficult this year. It's about connecting people to the community and each other. What kinds of challenges did you face with this strategy, given the limitations of the past year? Greg, that had to be, everything changed a year ago.
Yeah, I think there are two layers of change this particular year. Obviously, COVID made it very difficult to get people together. A lot of the way we connect people is through social events. And so having a concert where you can introduce an entrepreneur to a resource they may need was a great way to make those connections happen. Also with George Floyd, it really raised awareness around other types of connection problems we're having in our community. And so our organization took a bolder stance on topics of equity, diversity, and inclusion as well, and trying to make sure that we are creating access points for people in central Wisconsin that are not from, you know, historically overrepresented community groups here. So, you know, making sure that populations of color, populations from the LGBTQIA community had just as much access to the high quality of life here as other residents have had.
What was the reaction from the community as a whole when you started to get more proactive about these kinds of social causes?
You know, I think generally it's been a very positive reception. You know, there are some people who, you know, it takes a one-on-one conversation for them to understand what our goals are and why we're doing it. But we do find that people in central Wisconsin want this to be a great community for everybody. I think one of the challenges we've had is counteracting the national narrative that is so divisive on some of these topics and finding ways instead to get people to focus on what we want to do here locally. You know, people do want Portage County to be a really great place for anybody who moves here and lives here. And at first, it can be kind of hard to hear that it may not be that for everybody yet. But if you put them in a context of empowerment, trying to empower as many people as we can, and recognizing that we do that really well for certain groups of people, we don't do that as well yet for everybody. We found people are much more open to that conversation.
Shifting just a little bit here, I'd like to hear about the Idea Center. Can you tell me, what's the Idea Center? How does it work?
The Idea Center really was that phase of reaching out at the time to the city and to the county and saying, how can we help support the economic draw of new talent to the community? And what can we do as a community that will engage more economic impact and entrepreneurship, which is a very creative process. And in a conversation with the county, actually, Greg and I have this, you know, we asked, what can the county do to help support? And that they came back and said, well, we actually have a building that's vacant that we have a planned use for, but it's not going to be there yet. And there was a lot of conversation around the business community saying, we need an idea. Well, I'll call it the Idea Center, but at that point it was an entrepreneurial space of some sort of business startup, incubator, you name the term, and that's what it was looking for. And we turned to our board and we said, okay, we can do this. Let's just kick in and start something and take this space. And I will say Greg spent a lot of time and a staff person at the time taking down mirrors, ripping up carpet, painting walls. Community volunteers just came in and just revamped the space the best that we could to just, again, provide a space for people to start to gather who were interested in economic impact, starting a business, and we just launched it. So I think from there, I think Greg can describe kind of like what has transpired from this impetus to the day-to-day activity of what is actually happening there.
Sure, Greg. Can you expand on that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what Bill did a good job of talking about is that there are all these different types of spaces we talked about, a business incubator, a maker space, a co-working center. And when we looked at bigger cities, they all had these types of spaces all over the place. And what we found is if we did any one of those things, we couldn't find enough users to make it run. But if we did a really broad space that brought all those people into the same location, we could get enough users in the space. So, you know, I'm talking on a podcast studio mic in our podcast studio. We have a video studio here. We have 3D printers here. We have wood carvers who come in and do wood carving here once a week when we can. We have people who are entrepreneurs or working telecommuters who come here and work remotely. And so what we did was we just basically created a space that anybody who was doing something creative could come in and find support. And we didn't define what type of creativity we were trying to support. And what that did is it pulled in enough of a network that we ended up having enough users to make it viable in a smaller community. And what I think has been especially cool about that has been that it's created all these interconnections across sectors. So, you know, we have a video production company that launched out of our space that has now done commercials for entrepreneurs that have created businesses out of our space because they know each other because they work out of the same facility.
And I think that model is you know, it can be replicated across the state, across the nation, that there are so many small communities that are looking for those connectors, that to me is what is the most valuable and is just so inspiring that people want to connect. And hopefully now that COVID is kind of going away, that there's that opportunity. They've been alone for a long time, but they've had ideas, they've had creativities, and they're ready to come out of their shell and talk to people and get things going. And that's just like, you got to provide just the space, but it doesn't have to be fancy, because the space is, it is not fancy by any means. It is not, you know, like, yeah, it's pretty bare bones, but it gets the job done. because people just want to be together, and that, and ideas aren't, you know, you don't have to have a lovely wallpaper to have a great idea.
You mentioned that this idea can be replicated. Have you reached out to other communities? Have other communities reached out to you? How is that working?
Yeah, so we actually have our first satellite location now in Adams, Wisconsin. Adams County has a Create Adams County that's up and running. So if anybody is in the Adams County area and looking for co-working space, there actually is a new co-working space in Adams County that is based on the same model, and we've been working with partners down there. We've actually been in some conversations with Waupaca and Rhinelander too. So, you know, having two other community members on this call is great. You know, what we really want to see happen over time is that these are network spaces across communities, so that you know, we're on a key fob system. So ideally, the key fob gets you in wherever you are, because more and more people are working across a lot of communities. That, you know, they spend some time in Stevens Point, some time in Wausau, some time in Adams. And so to be able to hop into whatever co-working space they need to use based on where they are that day for their business and meetings would be really helpful as a way to support a more 21st century economy.
That's interesting. The key fob then would let you into Stevens Point if you live there, and Rhinelander if you're vacationing there, or and so you'd have access to all of that then.
Yeah, and ideally we could put different types of technology in each of those spaces. So if you need our video studio, you can come down and use that. But maybe the woodworking facilities in Adams and the metal shops in Rhinelander, and that you can, you know, if you needed to drive to access more equipment, you could use this network of creative resources across central Wisconsin.
I have to say that artists, really people in the entire creative community, were so hard hit by the pandemic. For so many reasons. I'm curious what kind of opportunities you provided, you know, during this time when people were staying at home, events were canceled, they were not getting together to collaborate in the same way that they would have before the pandemic hit. Artists were having a really hard time finding a way to support themselves through their artwork. You know, what did you do to pivot during that time?
You know, there are two, I think, big things that we did. First, we do a summer music series here in Stevens Point. We will be back at Piffner Park this summer doing live music, again, with some safety protocols in place. This past year, we did it as a live stream, but we still kept all of our artists booked, and we still paid out the contracts to all of those performing artists. We felt like it was important as an organization to honor all the contracts we could, because we knew it was really difficult for especially performing artists who lost a lot of their revenue over the course of the year. The other thing is that we raised a bunch of grant money so that we could paint murals across the county. So most of those will actually get painted this summer, but we're going to paint 11 murals this summer. And what we did was we encouraged artists who could show some sort of economic disadvantage because of COVID to apply to paint a mural so that we could supplement their revenue in that way. So it was sort of a combination of figuring out how we can do creative online live streams and how we could find creative community projects that would engage artists that we could fundraise for, or find grant dollars for, to get them paid for their work that way.
One theme I see throughout your message on your website is that there is a connection between creativity and a vibrant, economically healthy community. Bill, what is that connection? Can you explain why it's so important to have a creative community if you want to have a vibrant economy?
I think, you know, people want to be in a place that's exciting and fun. I've always said, you know, you can provide great work, you can provide a great workplace, but at the end of the day, I want something to do on Friday night or Saturday night, and I want something to take my kids to. And it doesn't have to be that elaborate, but it's that vitality, that energy of bringing the community together. If there's at least a place to go and to gather, that to me has always been at the core of what we've tried to do in very small ways over the years. And again, I always like to not think like, oh, wow, we've done it all right and we are the greatest thing and all that type of thing. That, you know, we've always thought about how is this repeatable in other communities that are similar to Stevens Point. I mean, we didn't, you know, 17 years ago, we didn't have a headline about the arts in our newspaper when they actually had newspapers. And, you know, it's like, it's very small steps along the way that you just have to keep talking and start small. It's, you know, we had a competition the last two summers of painting our trash cans on Main Street. That's pretty simple to do for a community. And I think it's just that vitality of education. and keep talking to community leaders, especially if governmental entities are not engaged in a way of being supportive of doing something creative or taking a new step. We've been very lucky in our area to be able to be supported in that way. But I think it's that process of just pointing out examples of other communities and what they're doing. And I think people will eventually see it and be open to the ideas.
And Greg, what do you see? Is there a tourism connection here? Do you think having a community that's really rich in art and creativity is a draw for visitors? I mean, do people come because of that?
I think it's not just visitors, but it's residents too. If you think about new workers, new employees, you know, people who are going to make their homes here, there's a great strategy I learned from our tourism bureau here that if it's a great place to visit, it's a great place to live. And so, you know, that's that visiting piece is a test drive for a lot of people when they go to a community. And if they go and they have a great time, they're much more likely to want to stay in that community long term. And so, you know, I think that visitor piece for us is a great way for us to advertise what people could have accessible long term. And so what we're trying to think about is, if you love being in a place, it's really easy to imagine your life there. And so more and more what we're trying to do is leverage the arts and leverage creativity to make it very easy for people to imagine their life in Stevens Point.
And I know that's something, Bill, that you touched on as well.
Yeah, and that is, you know, quite honestly, going back in time, our tourism agent area, that was a step, again, of education and outreach and trying to ask them to just do something that we had, as a community, never marketed ourselves as an arts destination. We were always recreational and a conference center, and we really had to pivot back in the day when our big Holiday Inn convention center went out. And what do we do? What do we talk about? And, you know, I encourage those people, communities, to talk to their tourism agency about the fact of what can you market to have people come there that may be a creativity based.
Greg, what do you see as the future for Create Portage County? What does the future hold?
You know, again, I think we just are learning that this works. It's a really great strategy, especially for small communities, to invest in creativity. The umbrella category that allows for arts, business, and community impact creativity to all be in the same space is really helpful. And, you know, for us, it's about trying to see how much that can spread, not just in Portage County, but across central and north central Wisconsin, as we love all the communities that are in this place and want to see them all thrive and be vibrant.
From Create Portage County, founder and president Bill Sherrill and executive director Greg Wright, thank you both for sharing your vision today. We truly appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
Coming up on Route 51, we'll hear from Ashley McLaughlin and Tracy Steinbrink from Art Start Rhinelander, all about their efforts to bring art and cultural events back to the Rhinelander area, and with it some much welcome tourism. Your questions are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can email questions to us at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Joining us now from Art Start Rhinelander is Program and Operations Director Ashley McLaughlin. Ashley, thank you for being here today.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Also from Art Start, Development and Communications Associate Tracy Steinbrink is here. Tracy, appreciate you being here as well. And I can't quite hear you, Tracy, so you might want to check on your microphone and make sure that we are all set, but we will get to you. We would love to hear from listeners too. So email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. So Ashley, tell us about Art Start Rhinelander. When did this organization launch? It's not brand new. So I want to hear about the history and the mission as well.
Yeah. So, this year is actually an exciting year for Art Start. It is our 10-year anniversary in our community. So we have plans to celebrate that in some way, shape, or form this winter. But Art Start started as just a group of volunteers that got together and thought that Rhinelander needed an art center. The group of volunteers petitioned the city to occupy a vacant federal building in the downtown Rhinelander area. And the city ended up purchasing the old original post office building from the federal government and lease it to the ArtStart organization. So it's kind of a creative placemaking project as well. And the group of volunteers came into the building, did a great big overhaul on the space, created two beautiful contemporary gallery spaces, and then also many office spaces for other small businesses to occupy. So the whole basement of ArtStart is occupied by music teachers and other creative businesses. And then the second floor, the main floor of ArtStart, we have gallery spaces, event spaces, an indoor stage, an outdoor stage, and then office spaces as well. So kind of a creative, interesting history of ArtStart.
Well, take me back to the early days of the pandemic. When everything shut down last March, and you had a lot of things planned. I mean, your organization typically hosts, 100 events a year?
Generally over 130-ish events a year. Actually, we struggled in the beginning. Up in northern Wisconsin, we also have limited broadband access. So the internet capacity up here is challenging. Even for our virtual learners, it's definitely a challenge that we had to face and we had to come up with solutions to. So in the beginning, virtual programming was a challenge. It's many of the businesses up here as well didn't have an internet presence. So websites for restaurants, ordering online, that really wasn't a thing up here before COVID. And then COVID kind of launched our community forward, I think. It made us see that we needed that to survive. As ArtStart, I guess all of the staff members are working mothers. So first and foremost, we went through the challenges of how to work from home and raise our children as well.
Right.
So we gave ourselves a little bit of grace, and we learned as we went. And then I guess one thing that never stopped during the pandemic was our exhibitions. We kept bringing in our exhibitions, and we partnered with a local media artist who was also very connected with ArtStart to produce 360 tours of our exhibitions. So we were able to put those online, which was, again, new to our community. And that we also scheduled virtual receptions with artist talks to complement those exhibitions, which I think was fantastic. The feedback that we get from the virtual receptions is that they're much more intimate. And we can really pause as a group. We used the 360 tour during the virtual receptions to kind of lead, or that kind of, we're able to show the exhibitions that way to a small group of people. And then the artists can share their inspiration or talk about each piece individually. So it's much more intimate than I think the group receptions that we had before. One other thing that we continued to do, again, working with that local media artist, was our In Progress programming, which is our community share night. That is open to all artists to share what they're working on. And it can be visual art. They can talk about a painting that they're doing. They can talk about a song that they're writing. They can share whatever art they're creating. So we continued that as well. And we put that on Facebook Live.
Okay. Tracy, I wanted to ask you something I asked Lillian earlier. I asked about, as you move forward and as the pandemic recedes, do you anticipate keeping some sort of virtual programming? Do you anticipate, continuing to maybe offer a mix of things? Do you find that having some virtual events are helpful to your organization?
Absolutely. They have not. I hope you can hear me okay now.
Yes.
I apologize about that. Absolutely. We have seen a lot of value in the virtual programming that we have done, the in progress, the artist receptions, and our virtual tours. They make connections over long distances. There are people that now have access to our galleries out of state that may not have. There are people able to watch our in progress performances that, you know, were not able to do that in person. So I think there's a lot of value in keeping some of the virtual things going. That being said, we obviously cannot wait to get everyone back together and get back to do in-person things. But the virtual, you know, we have seen value in that. And it's been reflected from the development standpoint. We're an organization that is only successful and is only around because of our donors, because they see the worth in the work that we're doing. And though the year was different, they continue to show up for us. They continue to show us through their gifts that they saw that we were on the right path, that we weren't going anywhere, that our staff, that our board, all of our volunteers were incredibly focused on keeping, you know, one foot in front of the other, keep things going. Like Lillian said, they didn't slow down. And honestly, I feel like we may have paused for a moment to catch our breath, but we kept going. And from a personal standpoint, I just joined the organization in September, right in the middle of all of this. And honestly, I was so thankful and really felt very lucky to work for an organization that was putting the safety of their staff, their board, our community first, and making changes and moving forward and not losing our mission, still serving our community where it's at and where it was at through this whole experience.
Tracy talked about the excitement of getting together again, and so many people are feeling that. I know you were an integral part of the Project North Festival when it happened a couple of years ago. Obviously, it did not happen last year. What's the plan for 2021?
Well, the plan for 2021, Project North, we had our first year in 2019, and it was such a successful year for us. Project North is a collaboration between the Rhinelander Area Chamber of Commerce, WXPR, Local Public Radio, ArtStart, and Nicolay College. So with all of those organizations, we all got together a couple months ago and decided that in order to be successful in year number two of Project North, we need to hold on a little bit longer. So for 2021, our plan is to postpone again. We're all really heartbroken about it, but in order to do the project justice, we need to be able to plan it thoroughly and safely for our community and at full capacity. All of our organizations are at limited capacity with staff and volunteers right now. So to thoroughly plan a festival to the scale of Project North and to what we want it to be, we need all of our resources back to be able to do that. So 2022 is going to be a fantastic year. We are so excited about it. We're upset that we can't do it sooner because we want to, but our organizations can't do it at the level that we want to. So
it sounds like an enormous challenge for sure. Mm-hmm. Tracy, can you explain why art is such an important facet of Rhinelander's identity? When I look at ArtStart's goals, it's, you know, cultural values intrinsic to the health of a progressive community. So can you explain that a little bit and what it means to Rhinelander?
You know, when I moved up to Rhinelander about 10 years ago, I did not know about what the strong how strong and how many artists are up here. And there's really a large community of artists up here. And, you know, ArtStart wants to be a part of that and wants to bring all of our, you know, community members into that world. And it plays an incredibly important role in our community for tourism. You know, we are right in the heart of downtown ArtStart. We're so lucky to be right in the heart of our downtown, right amongst all these wonderful businesses, a thriving downtown here in Rhinelander. And so on people's walking tours, they come in, you know, they stop into ArtStart, and it adds to their positive experience by visiting Rhinelander. I mean, like, I think it was Greg who was saying, you want people to leave Rhinelander with a really positive experience. People want to live where they've enjoyed spending time. And ArtStart is a part of people enjoying spending their time in our area.
Ashley, you mentioned collaborations when we were talking about Project North and making that happen next year. But as a whole, how important are those collaborations as part of your goals as an organization overall? How have you worked to partner with other organizations to make ArtStart stronger?
Collaboration is something that ArtStart holds very close, and it's very dear to what we do. ArtStart, we have staff, but all of our committees are run by volunteers. So our music committee, that's a group of local musicians that help us program all of our music programs for the year. Everything that we do is collaborative. We are a small organization. Rhinelander is a very small city. We have very limited resources in our city and as an organization as well. So we understand that we can do more if we collaborate. Kind of unique thing that came out of COVID, we started meeting with other organizations, so other community planners. We call ourselves the Dream Team in Rhinelander, and it's the Rhinelander School District. It's ArtStart. It's 4-H. There's the Rhinelander Area Chamber. Everybody in our community, all the organizations in our community that are planning events now meet regularly to talk about what we have coming up and to share resources and to talk about community needs that we hear. Each of our organization is approached and by people that are looking for something or say, oh, wouldn't it be great if Rhinelander also had this? And maybe it doesn't fit under ArtStart's mission, but it might fit under the YMCA's mission. So talking about those things and talking about the challenges that each organization faces and how we can work together to do more, I think that was a great thing that came out of COVID.
Before our final question, Tracy, I wanted to ask you, I know you have a lot of events coming up. Can you tell folks the website to visit so they can keep in touch with what's going on with ArtStart? What is the website?
Absolutely. It's artstartrhinelander.org, and you can go on there. You can take virtual tours of our current exhibitions and our past exhibitions and find out about all of the programming that we have coming up. So I hope everyone visits.
Thank you. Ashley, one last brief question. How do you see ArtStart growing after the pandemic is fully behind us? What's going to happen in the future?
ArtStart definitely has a foothold in the community, and the community reaches out. I'm seeing more and more people in the community and event leaders connecting with us to do more for the community. So I think ArtStart is just going to grow and continue to be a staple in our community.
Thank you. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Lillian Bittman, Communications Chair of the Waupaca County Arts Board, Create Portage County founder Bill Sherrill, and Executive Director Greg Wright, ArtStart Program and Operations Manager Ashley McLaughlin, and Development and Communications Associate Tracy Steinbrink. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll hear from two incredible award-winning artists in northern Wisconsin. And in 2 weeks, a Wausau heart surgeon will join us to talk about his unforgettable experience as a Cuban refugee emigrating to the U.S. when he was just 5 years old. Until then, we're heading out of town.